Setting up shop.
Hi everyone, welcome back to Setting Up Shop, your favourite podcast about setting up shop and becoming a small business owner, taking your craft business from a hobby into a business, maybe growing it, maybe even one day going full time with it. I'm Dan Woodturner from the UK, and as with me, as always, are my friends Rasmus Lowen, a blacksmith from Norway.
Hello.
And Heidi Jacobs, a potter from America.
Hello.
Proving that how low can you go? We could just keep going in rounds of that, couldn't we? Mm-hmm. All right, well, today, guys, we discussed it already, and we're going to talk about one of the subjects that I covered in the sort of the reel or the shorts, depending where you've seen it, which is the element of momentum. It's the element of kind of keeping your business going if you're not feeling it. But there's also the other part of it, which is, well, we can get to it a little bit later, but when you sort of like distract yourself or start comparing yourself to others who may or may not appear successful or appear to have things that you think you want and all of that kind of element. So we're going to start, I think, with the fact that you can never have a great day every day. You know, there are always going to be off days. And this goes back a little bit to talking about barriers and all of the kind of psychological aspect of things and with working. Now, for those of us like myself who are doing this part-time at the moment, and Heidi to a certain extent as well, it's not necessarily as much of a problem if you let things go for, say, a day. The problem comes if you really, really struggle like I do to then get started again. So if you were doing something regularly, like, you know, you always made sure you went out to your workspace every day to do at least half an hour, for instance, and then you skip one day, and then that means you don't go back in for 2 days, and then all of a sudden it's 3 days, and either there's a quote that's outstanding, or there's orders piling up, or you've got a market coming soon and you've not made stock, and it can be very detrimental and disheartening. Very similar in some ways to people who stop going to the gym and then have to try and start again. It can be a very similar kind of feeling. It's stretching your creative muscles rather than your physical ones, as it were. So given that's the situation, Heidi, if we chat to you first about this, because you're still, I feel you're still on that kind of, I mean, you're not on a 50-50 split from an income perspective. And certainly this year after, you know, your health issues, you've reined a lot of stuff back in. But I would say you're still firmly in the camp of you've got regular customer orders each month that you could scale up if you chose to do so to a certain extent. So you're kind of, you know, whereas I would say I'm much more in that kind of hobby aspect. I can let things drift a little bit, so maybe I'm more at risk or less at risk or whatever. But how do you kind of, first of all, how do you identify if that's happening, and what do you do to try and combat it?
Well, I think that with my personal current journey, it's I used to overdo it by, you know, trying to over task myself, and that was a lot of just me taking on more than what I had capacity for, and then feeling like I needed to maybe overdo it. Like if a client would say, I have as much time as needed to get something done, I would still put it on myself to get it done within whatever my imaginary timeline is, just because I'm constantly worried about like what the next thing is going to be that comes in, or, you know, what if this is the last project I ever do, or, you know, what if this is the last client that ever asked me to do something. And for the longest time, it was, I overwhelmed myself by pushing to be in the studio any waking moment that I wasn't obligated. And I mean, obligated to be doing something else. And now in this new mindset that I'm in, I'm trying to avoid having those moments where I feel like I'm slacking off. So if it's like I have a Sunday and I don't have any plans, but I also don't have any like urgent studio work, I'm trying to allow myself to use that Sunday to rest, like truly rest. Yeah. But I think one thing that might end up happening, or that I fear might happen, is that I would lose my momentum, right? Mm. Like, okay, well, this Sunday then turns into like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I'm not in the studio. And then just like, what if I'm still in that what if space? Like, I haven't made it to the point where like that does come to fruition, where I completely lose my momentum and I don't want to be in there. But I'm fear-based, really, at the end of the day. Like, I'm manic and fear-based, that if I don't follow through with an order earlier than when I'm supposed to have it delivered, or if I'm not putting myself in my studio on those days off, like, I don't know. I just haven't experienced that where I just can't go in my, or I don't want to go in my studio, or, you know, like I lack the personal wherewithal to like push myself to go in the studio. Like, that's not my issue, but it is a fear of mine knowing that other people, like even my husband, where it's like, oh, you know, the, like the gym metaphor of like, okay, well, if I miss the gym this weekend, and, you know, then I give myself a cheat meal, and then I, you know, give myself another cheat meal, and then I do this and that and the other thing. It's like you fall off the wagon. I haven't experienced that, to, like the fall off the wagon part, because I'm like neurotic. But it is a concern of mine that if I do let myself not live in fear, I don't know, like that I would, you know, slack off to the point where I'm like, that can wait. I don't have to do that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm very much project oriented.
May I ask one thing? Mm-hmm. Is a bit of that fear also that if you slack off too much, you are afraid of losing what makes it work, losing that bit of spark or something undefinable sort of that makes Vital Pottery work now?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe, because it's defined every aspect of the business. It's defined me as a maker and a person. Mm. I have been trying to like have little, like instead of the big gargantuan goals, like you guys remember the list I used to make of like, I have to accomplish these 45 pieces and then I have to do this and then I have to do that. I've pared it back. So now it's more like manageable.
30 items.
Oh yeah. But like more manageable. So instead of saying I can spend this entire weekend, Saturday and Sunday, the entire weekend in the studio and bang out these four orders that I have and then not have to worry about it during the week, I'm allowing myself to worry about it during the week, like spreading it out a little bit more. So I'm not just like burdened all weekend long. I don't know. I don't think that answers your question at all.
But to some extent, yeah.
I'm like waffling through it because I don't know that I've, at least with the pottery, I don't know if I've hit that point where like I don't want to be in my studio or I can't get the gumption to go work. It's not part of my psychology.
Yeah. It's interesting because I was obviously projecting a little bit there without necessarily realizing, and because I'm kind of the opposite. Like if I agree to do a commission for someone and I ask them the time limit and they basically don't give me one, they're like, oh, just whenever, like it's no rush. I will literally put that thing off for as long as possible. Like even if it's a simple job, more often than not, it's not. It's something I've not done before and I've accepted it as a commission because I know that I could do it with a bit of practice and it's interesting and it will push my skill set. But I then allow the fear of, but what if I get it wrong? Which realistically doesn't matter. It would just be, well, yes, the client purchased timber at your recommendation, but if you screw that up, it's not super rare. It's not like it's a, you know, this was handed down from my great grandfather and we want you to make it into a nice thing. It's more often it's off the shelf stuff.
Right.
And I could easily get a replacement part. Yes, that would eat into my profit, but it's not a risk as such.
Mm-hmm.
But I still allow the fear to dominate my kind of, oh yeah, well, I'm not ready to do that yet. I'm not ready to make that piece yet. But then it also can become a weird situation where, although I won't do that project, it's a bit like procrastination. Oh, well, I don't want to do that, so I do all these other things.
Mm.
So you then start finding other stuff that's still related to do. But that's not the same as when, you know, you might not do anything to do with the business for a day or a couple of days, and then I can start to struggle. And it's not that I don't want to do the business anymore or anything. It's just like, ah, oh, but it was really nice sat outside in the sun last night and just watching the world go by and, you know, having a drink and whatever. And actually, it's a nice day again tonight. And, you know, they're not here every day. And maybe, oh, actually, we're going to have a barbecue later. So, you know, and you can allow yourself to get tempted away from all of those things are true, but you could still put in like 15, 20 minutes doing some emails that you've not bothered responding to yet, or updating your balance sheet. You know, it's really mundane, like horrible admin stuff that you know doesn't take very long. And it doesn't involve you having to go to your creative space and make a mess or like think about, oh, well, I've got to change my clothes to do that and do this and everything else. I get in some ways quite jealous of the makers who have got something that they can do in front of the telly. Like, you know, they can sit in their living space with their family around them and no one complains or has a problem with them sat making their thing in that environment. So you're still with everyone, you're still able to socialize, but you're also still producing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that's just kind of an element of it for me. What about you, Rasmus? What's your, because this is the thing, is you're in a very different situation in that this is your full-time job.
Yeah.
So, if you decide not to go into the workshop for a couple of days, that's going to cost you, unless you've got a different way of generating revenue that doesn't involve you in that space.
Yeah, I very much have that fear of if I were to stop trying so hard, stop working so hard, that whatever magical sauce I've concocted that makes this work now, I will lose that.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel that. Mm-hmm.
So I, in that sense, I'm very fair driven into, oh, I need to get shit done as much as possible all the time, which definitely is not healthy.
So on that, sorry to interrupt, but on that, does that mean then, so for the time that I've known you, not that I've stalked your social media and you may not have shared stuff about it anyway, but for the time that I've known you, the only time that you've taken a break or gone on holiday has always involved you either swing dancing, which is your major hobby as opposed to a job.
Yeah.
Or you have gone to some form of maker related event or had maker friends with you visiting the polar bears.
Yeah.
Which I think is the first time we've mentioned the polar bears on the podcast. For those people who aren't aware, they're not actual polar bears. They're very large white dogs that could probably see off a polar bear at Rasmus's dad's farm.
They're the cutest.
So is that accurate?
Yeah.
It feels like everything that you do, and I'm probably very similar, like everything that you do still is adjacent to work. Like,
And that's not a criticism of anyone at all.
I plan a lot of things adjacent to
it's
pottery.
It's not a criticism of anyone at all. No. If anything, and this is the next statement isn't a criticism of the people who aren't doing it, but if anything, one of your measures of success, like we've spoken about before, or the reason for your success rather than the measure, is the fact that you are so entrenched in what you are doing that it is every aspect of your life, and that you're always seeing an opportunity. And rather than stepping away from the opportunity, you're going, well, let's give it a go. What's the worst that could happen? You know, if budget allows, if time and budget allows, why not see if we can sell some machinery that I've imported from another country to other people out here? Oh, it's working. Okay, great. Well, let's scale it up. You know, like...
I have a very interesting sense of risk tolerance, I guess. I don't think it's all that extreme. There's a lot of things I'd consider absolutely stupid risks, like skydiving or riding a motorcycle. It's like, no, that's not for me.
No.
I don't even like going go-karting because it's like, it doesn't appeal to me.
Yeah.
But when it comes to all these business things, like I have maybe fallen into the trap of taking what I love and turning it into a business.
Yeah, but that's possibly what we're all discussing and our listeners are hoping to do themselves.
Yeah, and I'm saying I think I've just made that work because I am not caught up on the specifics of what I enjoyed in blacksmithing. It's more of, what can I do that allows me to do the thing I love as much as possible?
Yeah.
And like, I love the history of old tools and I like teaching the blacksmithing and I like seeing other people get so sort of enthralled in the magic of it that they want to do it themselves. And then suddenly that's a business opportunity of, well, fuck it. Okay. Can I get tools to them people? Can I organize something that makes the community of blacksmithing grow in Oslo? And all of these things. So yeah, almost everything I do outside of swing dancing, everything tends to revolve around the business because I have expanded the business to encapsulate almost everything I find interesting.
Yeah.
But that's a kind of, I would just like to say that I think I have been lucky to figure out the balance there of taking what I love and making it into business without losing the love for it.
Whoa. Hang on. you can't be the one to say that you think you've been lucky. So this won't be relevant to those guys, or won't be aware of those guys. We have our group chat he made a comment in there like yesterday or this morning or something about some business deals, that situations, and I jokingly put in there hashtag blessed, and he was straight on that about like, no, this is all hard work and like, the things going back around that I've put in. You don't get to now drop in there that I think I've been lucky because I figured out my balance. No, man, you put the work in. You've like,
I know, but it's not luck.
It's having a sense of, okay, I need to back off at this point and push forward on this one. You know, it's a level of like emotional and business intelligence that, whether or not that's been, you know, created from prior life experience or what, you know, you can't just claim that's luck. Luck is you meeting me. That's an entirely different situation.
Apart from the last comment, I recognize the compliment. I just struggle to accept it.
As we all do. Yeah.
Yeah.
But sort of in that little pocket of things, yes, I know I worked really hard on making the business work. And I've been doing it for 12 years now.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's not random that it's been working, but the luck element of it that I appreciate is the fact that I have met certain amount of people along the way that have given me bits of wisdom or help that now allows me to be where I am.
But the important part of that is, though, you've met them, you've listened to that, but then you've taken it on board and implemented it.
Yeah, so that's the smart part. Anyone can listen to good advice and be dumb enough not to take it.
Yes.
That's easy.
Well, yeah, we can look on and say it's easy, but, you know, it doesn't always translate, does it?
No.
But yeah, there's a certain amount of balance to the way I do things that makes me enjoy it more.
Yeah.
But I need to constantly also remind myself of and schedule in like, okay, now I'm doing X number of welding jobs. Now I need time to play with the hammer again.
I think that's the hard part to like, you can take on all the things, but being able to recognize like, okay, well, I know that like mentally I might get burned out by only doing this one facet of this, and being able to spread it out. I don't know. I think it's fascinating when you get to a point where you can judge yourself for like what's coming in and be able to have the power of no or the power of later versus, oh my God, I just need to take everything. And that like, well, if I don't say yes now, it's the opportunity is going to disappear.
Yeah. I think what it is managing the fear.
Mm. Yes.
It's managing the fear, but also I think I was going to say possibly through past experience. And I think part of this, I would argue, but because I didn't know you until after the situation, I would argue that possibly part of your time during your stint in the Army for National Service or whatever, that you had instilled in you the understanding of defining boundaries, in the sense of, you're very good that if we jump on one of these calls and there's something you need to do later, you will say to us right at the beginning, I need to be gone by X time because I have this other stuff to do. And it's not about how good is the conversation going or like, oh, we haven't seen each other in a while and we want to chat or whatever. It's not that you don't want to spend time with us, but you have been very good at setting in your mind and then telling us. So you've thought about it, you've vocalized it, and you've probably got it written down on Notion or some app somewhere with an alarm to tell you this is the next thing that needs to happen. And I think that's a very valuable skill that everyone can learn and teach. Well, not necessarily teach, sorry, everyone can learn, is being able to actually establish ahead of time, this is the portion of time that I can allocate to these things. And then you need to stick to it, which is the hard part of it. You know, and obviously that can change. You know, if you've allocated time in an afternoon to visit a client and then the client contacts you and says, I can't do today, can we shift to another time or another day? Then obviously that can move. But in that scenario, I would imagine what happens, Raz, if you have a client move, is that you then go, right, what can I do to fill that space with something else productive? Whereas I would go, hey, free time. Mm. Or like, you know, and it's the understanding of how precious time is, but balancing it enough that you're not burning yourself out by dedicating all of the time, all of to being productive all the time, whether it's admin, physical or whatever. It's scheduling in the social, the time with your better half and all of that kind of stuff as well.
I think the word there is disciplined.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Well, I think that's what I was getting at. I didn't know whether it was, you know, the scouts in the military that had kind of instilled that level of discipline and you've just managed to carry it on. because you were young and impressionable, and it just didn't make sense to not do that.
Yeah, one or the other. But that's definitely a big thing that I think is very important, making a plan and being able to stick to it as much as possible. And also being able to adopt a plan of saying like, oh yeah, the client rescheduled. Well, I already have this long list of things that should be done. None of them are critical, but yeah, I can relax by doing one of the more relaxing parts of this, some of the less intensive things.
Yeah. But again, you know, that's the thing, is you've got a list somewhere of not priority, but needs to be done. And you can just pull that up. And, you know, if it was Heidi who had that list, there'd probably even be time frames next to each one as to approximately how long each task should take. And therefore, you can pick one relevant based on the actual thing. I'm just basically really, really being down on myself today on my lack of discipline or organizational skills compared to you guys. But yeah, I think that's definitely interesting to see the way in which you both kind of work in that regard. And the way in which you handle that kind of situation. So, because we need to maintain momentum, and it's been too much of Erasmus Love Fest already today.
Sorry.
It's fine. It's fine. I also alluded to, in possibly not the same short reel, but a different one, that if we talk about the comparison to other people, and with social media these days, this can be very, very difficult, even if we know, oh yeah, but not everything you see on there is accurate or true. I saw the other day, and I'm sure this is true, and I don't think anyone makes this one up necessarily, but we will all have seen some form of a video of a person who is nominally a small-time creative person who is doing it alongside their full-time job, who has suddenly had a video go viral, or you could argue that this is a video they have created as a marketing engine to try and make it go viral, to make it look either way. Whatever the situation is, typical scenario, oh, I can't believe this, it's live, and you see like these orders dropping in and they don't understand why it's happening, and then they potentially don't have enough stock to fulfill orders, so they're having to buy more stock, but the stock previously would have lasted 6 months, and you know, and there's tears of joy and everything else. And I truly hope that all of those videos are accurate and that those people are having an amazing, successful time. But the point I had got to in the short video was, just because you're seeing all that, that doesn't mean that they literally started their job the day before. This isn't no one has had that epiphany moment and then just launched it out and everyone's seen it straight away and bought it. Those of us who have tried to build websites ourselves about our very niche thing will be very quickly aware about the amount of information you have to understand in order to build the website, how to produce it so that it's properly optimized for web searching and to try and make people aware of it, and how much money and time you have to do to push it out there so that people physically see your stuff. And that's before you've done any marketing. So the amount of work to get someone to being an overnight success, I think, is a lot more than people recognize or widely recognize from a social media point. And that's before you even start thinking about, well, it's all right for them, they're in a full-time job, or it's all right for them, they've got a partner who's wealthy enough that they can afford to sit in their studio and paint all day or whatever, which all come from places of jealousy, whether they're true or not. The point is that whoever is doing the thing still has to be good at the thing for it to get to be popular.
Yeah, and it's far too easy to make excuses either for why you can't or for why they can.
Yeah.
But when it comes right down to it, you kind of just need to get shit done and do the thing.
Yeah.
Even if it's the most basic of practice pieces, just to keep the ball rolling.
Yeah.
At least that's often how it feels for me. Like, oh, I know I should make more nails. I have people who wants to buy hand-forged nails. I hate forging nails. But I also kind of hate forging nails because I don't have a good system for doing them, and I don't feel like I'm good at them.
Yeah.
So maybe if I just take the time and do the work, maybe I won't love it, but at least I'll tolerate doing it and I know I can make money with it.
Yeah. I want each of you to think this for a minute, and you don't have to name names.
Bobby Duke.
That's just shouting out Bobby Duke for, you don't even know what the question was yet. But can either of you think of, we're flipping on.
I love how Bobby Duke probably is the right answer anyway.
No. Can either of you think of a creative person or maker who makes outstanding work that is known to very, very few people because they either are not interested in shouting about it, because, you know, they make outstanding work, but they've got enough business from people that they don't need to really push it or don't fancy pushing it, or just genuinely don't understand. And this is more likely to be the case. They don't understand how good their work is. And so they are too scared and don't want to shout about it on the internet and whatever else. And it might be a generational thing, you know?
I can think of a few.
Okay. Well, you don't have to name names, but if you want to, that's fine. Can you give us an example of what the person does and why it's amazing or different from other people?
I would say the lad I had come help me teach a chef knife making class in January that I taught the first blacksmithing class to 6 years ago.
Okay.
Yadimun. He is an outstanding knifesmith at this point. He's absolutely one of the best I know. But he doesn't fully recognize that because he's just dabbling in it. He's just having a bit of fun. And he's spending a lot of time on every single knife.
Yeah.
But that shows.
Yeah.
So he doesn't think he is any good because he feels like he's spending far too much time on everyone. But he's also learning to make the quality and recognize what quality is.
That's a good example. Heidi?
1 second. My husband is humming a song.
Okay. So I told you the answer wasn't Bobby Duke, honestly.
Sorry. do all the way upstairs. My door was open.
Wonderful.
He always wanted to have a 15 minutes of fame.
I won't get it on this podcast.
2 seconds. You know, I live in Pittsburgh, and we're adjacent to the Appalachian Mountains. And there are an incredible, incredible amounts of craftspeople in this region that just do it for the love of crafting. They do it for the love of the pottery or metalworking or leatherworking. And a lot of them, it's heritage, you know. Yeah. Their daddy did it. Their pappy did it. Their great pappy did it. You know, like it's generationally brought to them. And the amount of talent in the region is just incredible. But the only way that you know about it is by visiting and, you know, going and patronizing the stores, or, you know, even taking the time to visit the workshops and stuff, because they do open the shops for people to come and see. And that's where it's like, that whole, like, if a tree falls in the forest, does anybody hear it?
Yeah.
Like, if it's not known about on the internet, does the talent exist? Well, of course it does. But it just isn't measured in the way that maybe we are getting used to things being measured from a popularity standpoint. But there are a couple of people out there that are starting to record, you know, these folks and what they're making from, you know, these people that can just, like, whittle these amazing birds and things that look like they're legitimately alive to these people that have been, you know, making pottery in wood kilns in the mountains that only sell certain parts of the year. People are starting to document their existence. Yeah. And I think it gets lost in all the commotion of people chasing numbers and chasing likes.
Yeah.
That, and I want to say, like, a couple of years ago when we gave up making videos on YouTube, it was a realization for us that, like, our worth and our ability and our talent had nothing to do with whether or not somebody clicked on a video or made a comment. And then it was like, well, making the videos takes more time than, you know, doing the craft. Why am I focusing on trying to become a videographer and a storyteller when all I really want to do is, like, throw on the wheel?
Yeah.
So, like, pairing that back and seeing those people that have just stayed in their shop and done the business of the shop work, it's like, I don't want to project onto them what I feel like you should have a million followers because you're so good. Yeah. But I also recognize the work that it takes to get those million followers.
Yeah.
I mean, Matt Cremona just did a interview last night with another maker, and he was talking about, like, when he first started, he was, you know, very young man, and he was just talking to a camera. He had no idea that what he was doing was going to end up pushing him in the direction that he's in now, where he's, like, selling lumber. He's selling fine furniture that he's making in his shop. He had no idea at that point that just talking to a camera was going to inspire him to, you know, buy the equipment to be able to do all those things.
Yeah.
So was it luck? Was it perseverance? Was it, what was the magic sauce there for him? And I mentioned Bobby Duke earlier. He started at the same time we did, but he's got this infectious personality that goes along with the ridiculous amount of talent that he has.
Yeah. He is also positively insane.
He is insane. But he's such a bright spark that it kind of makes sense that social media would work for him.
Yeah.
Because he tells a good story. Yeah. He's engaging, he's funny, and the end result is really flipping cool. Matt Cremona is a little bit different. His authenticity and what he was building kind of created that like snowball down a hill momentum of like, okay, this is next, this is next, this is next. And he was just like riding it all the way. And that end result, I mean, it's still growing, obviously, but the end result was bigger shop, bigger audience, you know, bigger orders, larger equipment, then had to get a bigger house. And that, you know, like those are the kind of things that he was open to what was being brought to him.
Yeah.
Versus being obsessed about what he didn't have.
Yeah.
At the beginning, he had a little shop. He was caring for children in his home as a stay-at-home dad, had just lost his job and was just kind of putting it out to the world. Like, hey, this is what I'm doing. Come along for the ride. And people chose to. And I think there's a lot to be said about, you know, taking those opportunities and letting them carry you versus looking at those opportunities and saying, I'm not ready yet, or I don't have the right tools yet, or I don't have enough space yet, or whatever. Like there's always a,
that's not the financially best decision.
Yeah. There's always an excuse. But to go back to your point of like people that are just doing it and don't have the social media claim, they're still doing it.
Yeah.
But what does it matter?
Oh yeah.
If they're viral, if they're viral or not, to them, they're like, I love the craft. I love what I'm doing. I don't need applause. I don't need likes. I don't need whatever.
Every piece of artwork doesn't need to change the world.
Right.
Sometimes you just do it because you need something to do in the moment, right? And other times you do it because you need stuff to, you have stuff to work through. And art is the result of that. And then other times you have commissions where someone wants art and they want it made by you. And it is kind of soulless in that sense. It doesn't mean it's worth any less, any of these. They all do a job. They all have a function. One is your mental health. One is your financial health.
See, that's, you touched on something that I find really interesting there. And I've struggled with as well. And, you know, yourselves and other friends will realize, like, grasping the concept of someone who is in the same craft as yourself wanting to buy an item of yours at full price.
Mm. Yeah, that's intimidating.
And you're sat there going like, but you can make one of these. Why do you want mine? Or because it's made by you. Oh, okay, that's fine. Well, I'll give you friend and family discount. No, I don't want to. I want to
support you.
And the person who did it to me, like, literally just went on my website and bought it. I had no idea that they were going to. They just bought this thing through my website. And I was just like, but why? Like, the first thing I did to reach out to them was say thank you. But then what, you know, why? Like, you know, discount, all this kind of stuff. And they were like, no, this will look amazing in my kitchen. I really look forward to using it, you know, and all this kind of thing. And that, you know, actually, people will hardly be surprised to find by now, actually gave me like negative momentum rather than positive momentum.
Really, yeah.
Because I had to spend so much time trying to psychoanalyze myself as to why first of all they would want to do that, but then why was that bothering me that they would want to do that? Why couldn't I just go, oh cool, thanks very much,
post the item. A rut.
You know, and so I then got in a rut, and then that did slow me down for a little bit. Fortunately, I had a market coming up, so I had to be, you know, as we've said in the past, I need that deadline. I need that driving force of, you can't turn up to a market with nothing on the table, so you need to make stuff, or whatever the case may be.
Right.
So I think it's quite important to talk about momentum from the perspective of how do we keep moving forwards, but recognizing things that can knock us back and how we can adapt and cope with them. Because I think, again, it's interesting how for the majority of what you've done, Rasmus, you've not had one of my former lecturers used to call a domestic support module. What he means by that is a partner.
I need to write that down.
Yeah, domestic support module.
I need a t-shirt.
Yeah. I'm his domestic support module, or yeah, he's my domestic support module, or whatever. We could probably add that to the t-shirt list, I'm sure. But my point being is that you've realistically been on your own for that 12-year journey. Mm. So you've not been able to kind of go, oh, what do you think about this? Or what do you think about that? And have that support element of someone going, hey, you know, like, so how did it go in the shop today? And you're able to say, oh, well, this weird thing happened and such and such. And they understand you well enough to go, well, what are you going to do about that? Or why are you now going off doing this other thing? Like, come on, you know, and or able to ask the questions to make you think in the way to go forwards. That's not to say you don't have friends who will do that, you know, but it's makes a big difference. We keep bringing up, or I certainly keep bringing up, about having the support network around you of friends who are makers, but also, like, you know, partners, family, whatever, who understand you well enough to sort of go, oh, you know, from a social media perspective, oh, hang on, they haven't posted anything for 2 or 3 days. They didn't tell me they were going on holiday. I wonder if they're okay. Just drop them a message just to check in and, like, hey, look, get it if you're having a break from social media, but are you okay? Or are you spiraling on something because someone's asked a question and now you're like, are you doing a Dan? What's happening? Why?
I was realizing as you said that I've been using the social part of social media quite a lot for that.
Okay.
Like doing the, all of this has changed and developed a lot over the years, but like recently now, my habit is that I try to do Instagram stories, not every single day, but often enough that I sort of can sum up what happened during the day or the last couple of days easily for someone.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I realized that that's have been exactly that function for me,
yeah,
of having that slight feeling of I'm done with work. Let me sum up how it went. And maybe it inspires someone. Maybe I get some feedback. Maybe I have a problem and I get some help with it. But all the time, it's kind of like using the social part of social media and trying to use it for quote unquote good. Like it all becomes marketing, sort of, but that doesn't mean that's the main function for me.
Yeah, having a sounding board or whatever, or creating one.
Yeah, or just having, like you say, but sometimes you're not aware of the reaction you're having, but other people who know you are going like, so you said this and then you went directly into that, or I can see on you that this affected you. What's going on there? What you're thinking? What's your plan? How are you doing? And having someone that's willing to do that is immensely powerful.
Yeah.
Because, like, which is very cliche, but you don't know what you don't know unless someone points it out to you.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Absolutely. So we've taken a very meandering route, and it's a good job it wasn't, the conversation today wasn't about staying on point, but it was about momentum.
As if we ever stay on point.
How dare you? How dare you? Talking about momentum and allowing yourself to keep moving forwards, and how do you keep going forwards, and how do you stop the momentum from going backwards, and all that kind of stuff. And we had a very lovely quote that Rasmus said before we got started, actually, and I'll it verbatim. So apologies to if my mother-in-law ever listens to this and hears me use a curse word. The world, bearing in mind as well, English is not his first language. The world never stops just because you have a shitty day, okay?
You made that sound almost smart.
Well, you know, I converted part of the second half of it. but the world, you know, in English, it would be the world doesn't stop just because you had a bad day.
Yeah, and the world will... The grammar world, and such.
Yeah, grammar and language, it's fine. The world will always just keep going even if you're having a bad day. And I think if you are looking to do this as a business, if you are looking to do this enough of a business that you want to keep that momentum going to grow and to enjoy it, absolutely enjoy it, but also to actually get some level of success out of that, momentum needs to be there in a positive manner, whether it is you spend some time in the shop playing with something that's been on the back of your mind, whether or not you're doing some fadmin, as I like to call it, you know, emails, bookkeeping, that kind of stuff, or whether it's even just like, you know, reading some of the, maybe you've got reference books like I do, and you just grab one off the shelf and just look through it for inspiration, and then maybe it will send your brain on more of an inspirational path. And I've been looking at an awful lot of books on sharpening tools recently for various different reasons, and what I found fascinating about that, because we're going to deviate completely again, is when you get a book that's on sharpening tools that you don't normally use, and you're suddenly looking at, oh, okay, so hang on a minute, if I was to try and sharpen a scythe because I'm cutting grass or something with it and I'm doing this by hand, what are the important points to get it so that it is going to last all day, or enough that you can keep it honed during the day and all that kind of stuff? And so it starts to play with your brain, and you distract yourself almost from the parts that aren't necessarily as exciting and are holding you back. So you can, in some ways it's procrastination, but also not. And you can kind of almost trick yourself sometimes, but it can be a struggle. But reach out to people if you recognize that you've lost your momentum on it. And hell, you know, you can reach out to all three of us. We're available through Instagram on @settingupshop, setting_up_shop, spelled SHOPPE. You can reach us individually. If you'd rather speak to us individually, I am @Tarrants, TARRANTS.co.uk. Rasmus is @RasmusLoen, LOEN. And Heidi is @Whitehall_pottery. It doesn't have to be a question related specifically to our craft. I had one earlier today from a guy in the UK asking about how he got insurance on products that he was selling. You know, for the customers who were using the products and getting the insurance and stuff. And he was about to go to an insurance adjuster, and he was worried about the cost. And thankfully, I was able to point him towards a company in the UK that cover all of that up to £10 million worth for like £38 a year. So, you know, there are things like that, that if we don't know the answer, we will try and find someone we can point you towards who does. But certainly, if you've lost momentum, if you're unsure, if you don't know who else to call, then, well, you know, we're not myth or Ghostbusters, but we can give you a hand. If you've made it this far, all the way through, then thank you very much for listening. And we look forward to seeing your ears listen to us again in the future through the mystical realms of whatever podcasting app you have got. I'm clearly getting a bit delirious, so we'll say bye now.
Bye.
See you.